The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the Studio Gym, where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a great show planned for you today. For those of you who are tuning in for the second hour, Subversity Science Roundup, we're not doing that this week. We will be back with that series next week. During the first hour, we'll be talking to author Marlene Zook about her book, Paleo Fantasy, What Evolution Really Tells Us About Sex, Diet, and How We Live. Then during the second hour, we'll be joined by Matt Chan and Cheryl Brost, two CrossFit warriors who make it to the CrossFit World Games every single year, it seems like. And we're going to be discussing their lives, their challenges, and how hard they train. So let's get started right away. My first guest is Professor of Ecology, Evolution, and Behavior at the University of Minnesota and author of the book Paleo Fantasy, Marlene Zook. How you doing, Marlene?
Great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, first I have to say this is really a great book. And for those of you who are devotees of ancestral diets and paleo diet, do not be afraid of this book. This book is fantastic, and it makes you think about the decisions that you make and the assumptions that we make about evolution and its effect on us and the diet of yesteryear. But, you know, Marlene, this is not a new phenomenon. It's just happening in a larger mass today. We've all known people who have watched Gone with the Wind and said, you know, I was supposed to be born in that time. That time looked like where I belong. I remember when I was a kid, I thought I was supposed to be a cowboy. You know what I mean? But our fantasies about these earlier times are skewed because all we see are these little snippets of what life in this particular instance was. We don't see the whole life, the whole challenge. And it's almost like there's a large groundswell now where we're looking at everything modern is bad and we should go back to the caveman days, isn't it?
Well, it's hard to escape this feeling that, you know, somewhere something, you know, has gone terribly wrong. And there's, you know, this great cartoon that shows one of these, you know, evolutionary progressions where you've got, you know, the amphibian that's just climbing onto land and then the, you know, mammal and the primate. And it, and, you know, and you've got this early human that's walking, standing straight up. And then it, you know, supposedly evolves into this guy like with a pot belly crouched over, you know, a computer with horrible posture. And so, you know, you think, huh, is this really where we've been going? And, you know, you look around and see that there are all these, you know, so-called diseases of civilization, diabetes, we're, you know, obese, we're unfit. And, you know, I can absolutely see where it's easy to draw the conclusion that, boy, we are just not really lining up with the way we were meant to be.
Well, and something that my audience knows, for the past 9 years now, I've been promoting what I call an ancestral diet, but I don't say you have to go all the way back to the caveman days. You just have to go back to before food was adulterated and compromised to find what you should be eating. But you have to look at where your genetics were derived from, because we have polymorphisms that occur because of our exposure to certain things. So the region of the world that your ancestors came from plays a role in this as well. So the pursuit of the quote unquote perfect human diet is a flawed approach to begin with, because it's a very unique and specialized thing for each of us.
Absolutely. And not only that, if you want to talk about, well, what were human beings eating a long time ago, there's lots of complexity to that. First of all, what do you mean by a long time ago? Do you just mean the period immediately before agriculture? Do you mean longer ago than that, when humans hadn't spread throughout the world and were mostly in Africa, or what? So there's the when. And then there's the where, because of course people lived in a lot of different places and used different things for their diets depending on where they lived. And, you know, there's also no guarantee that what they were eating was perfect at the time. So that's an idea that I got really interested in, is that people seem very convinced that, way back when, whether you think way back when was 10,000 years or 100,000 years or whatever, people were perfectly in tune with their environment, or they think that, you know, someone who's living a modern or contemporary hunter-gatherer existence is perfectly in tune with their environment. But in fact, all organisms all the time are this endless series of little compromises and trade-offs, and you don't get this situation where, phew, we're done evolving, and, you know, now we've gotten that whole being in sync with our environment thing down, and we can go and, you know, play sports.
Yeah,
or take up
good
knitting.
Good thing we got that whole evolution thing out of the way. Now we can.
Right. And so, but I think there is that perception that we got that evolution thing out of the way, you know, at a time before agriculture and certainly before the Industrial Revolution, and that, you know, A, we haven't had any time to evolve since, and that B, we were, of course, perfect then. And both of those things are wrong.
Well, you know, and we're going to talk more about this, because I want to talk about rapid evolution, because this is a phenomenon people need to get their head around. Because evolution is occurring right now.
Yeah.
In front of us.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've done some recent shows with Dr. Randy Thompson, who looked at ancient populations, and we see that arteriosclerosis was there in the same form and shapes it is today, with populations going back millions of years. So clearly what they were doing wasn't precluding them from these diseases. The problem was it didn't show up because most people, you know, were gone by 40 years old. So they died from something else before the plaque in their arteries choked their heart off. And then I think his name was Dr. Richard Wrangham, came on and, and cleared up that, hey, you know, we've been cooking food for millions of years, folks. So this whole idea that we have to eat raw is really not necessarily correct. Now, look, I like raw beef once in a while. I like carpaccio and I like those kind of things, but you don't have to abandon cooking your food because evolutionarily, is that even a word? We kind of have adapted to that as well. So this notion that we have to go back to those days may actually be flawed because we have already made adaptive changes to do the things that a lot of the things that we're doing today in our diet. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. And in fact, I was just thinking as you were talking, as you know, like maybe you wrote my book. Did you actually write my, maybe I did not write my book. I forgot, you know.
Why? We're on the same page, in other words.
Absolutely.
Oh, good, good. Well, that's a wonderful thing. And quite frankly, we've had this discussion in the past with other individuals who promote paleo, but they're not zealots. You know, they give rise to other ideas. My problem is that there's a large faction of people out there who, this is paleo, this is the way you have to do it, and if you're not doing it this way, you're an idiot, this is the only way. And we really don't know how paleolithic human beings ate. We're just surmising from the stuff that we can extrapolate. But Leslie Aiello from the Wenner-Gren Foundation told me a long time ago, look, it's impossible to eat paleo today because the food is different. We don't have the food that they had back then, so why are you even fooling yourself into thinking you're eating paleo?
And that's true to a degree that I think is hard to appreciate now because, you know, we grow up with what looks like very, you know, natural products, you know, that, you know, it's an apple, you pull it off of a tree, what could be more natural than that? But of course, that apple is the result of many, many, many generations of selective breeding. And, you know, people who talk about GMOs, you know, genetically modified foods or genetically modified organisms, we have been GMing foods for a long, long time. The manner in which we're doing it is different. The tools we're using are now different because we're able to do more sophisticated things. But an apple is incredibly genetically modified from its ancestor. Corn is incredibly modified from teosinte, which is what it's evolved from, and its ancestor, if you look at teosinte, it looks like sort of the head of a grass plant, which is basically what it is. It's just got a few little kernels on it. It's, you know, really wimpy, and, you know, it would be impossible to use as a real food source today, which is not to argue either way and to say, oh, and modern corn is terrible because we've modified it, or modern corn is fabulous because we've modified it. It's just this recognition that virtually no food that you can get today is like its ancestor a few thousand years ago.
Right, right. And obviously, the story is still yet to play out on the new genetic modifications that they're doing, on whether or not this food is quote-unquote good for us, bad for us, dangerous, or whatever. But what is clear, when you look at evolutionary down pressure, is that if humans eat it long enough, they're going to adapt to it somehow.
Well, what's interesting to me is that's true probably in a very broad sense, but what's interesting to me and part of why I wanted to write the book is to explore why it is that some things seem to evolve very quickly and some things maybe not so much.
Right.
So for example, lactase persistence, the ability to digest dairy, is something that we now understand pretty well, and we understand how it's evolved in an incredibly short time from an evolutionary perspective, like 5,000 years. You know, this is unbelievable as, you know, if you look at evolution, that a species would change its genes in 5,000, in this few generations. And yet, you know, we've documented that it happened, we documented what the genes are, we understand a little bit at least about how it varies across the world, and so forth. But then, has that happened with other foods? Have we grown to be able to, or have we evolved to be able to adapt to, you know, large amounts of processed grain? Maybe not so well. Well, why would that be? And so to me, the question of why some things evolve quickly and some things evolve slowly is a much more interesting one than just saying, okay, we were great back then and we just shouldn't deviate because that's the environment in which we evolve.
Right, right. We have to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about lactase persistence and the story of milk. We're talking this hour with Marlene Zook. Her book is called Paleo Fantasy, What Evolution Really Tells Us About Sex, Diet, and How We Live. This is a great book. You must go out and get it. It's available at Amazon.com. If you're a paleo devotee, if you're an ancestral diet devotee, this is a great book because it makes you ask the right questions about the choices that you're making. Are you making them blindly because you read it on a blog? Or are you making them because you're applying critical thinking, which you know I'm all about? Okay, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Sending out the message to all of my friends. We'll be looking flashy in my
mind. I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest protein bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Have you ever been let down by so-called nitric oxide muscle pump products before? Well, prepare to be shocked. Vengeance is like nothing you've ever tried before. Vengeance leverages several different scientifically proven technologies to deliver what some users say are painfully explosive pumps. If you're satisfied with nitric oxide products that make you wonder if they're working, move on. But if you want a muscle pump that you'll not only feel, but others will see, train with a vengeance. Go to xfmuscle.com today and get vengeance.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrian C. Altrian C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrian delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to AltrianC.com. That's AltrianC.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to AltriantC.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altriant C. 21st century vitamin C.
Wherever you call your battlefield after each training engagement, you must recover. Introducing the most complete all-natural and organic recovery formula, AmNutrition's Basic Trainin', formulated by a military veteran. Basic Trainin' provides the ammunition your body needs to recover and continue the fight. No fake sugar or flavors, no GMOs, less than 1 milligram of sugar and soy per serving, with complete nutrition no other company provides. Arm yourself with the healthiest recovery formula on the market, the body's ammunition. AmNutrition. Join the nutritional revolution by going to muscleamnutrition.com. That's muscle, AmNutrition.com.
Recover!
AmNutrition.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan-2, Mechanical Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Companies.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest is Marlene Zook. We're talking about the book Paleo Fantasy. And so you invoke the dairy word. And this is one of the areas where I split with people like Dr. Lauren Cordain. I say, look, first of all, when I do drink dairy, it's seasonal. And I drink raw unpasteurized milk and not pasteurized or homogenized and so on and so forth. And I do well with it. In fact, I've gotten leaner than ever while drinking milk and eating raw butter and drinking raw cream. And I don't get flatulence or problems with it. So clearly I'm predisposed to be able to consume it. And then other people will say, no, you must cut out dairy no matter what. It's killing you.
So dairy is what I often call the poster child of rapid human evolution, because it's one of the best examples we have for known genetic changes in the human genome that, you know, that have happened very recently. And the way it happened is through a really cool process that people call gene culture coevolution. People have been herding dairy for many thousands of years, have been herding cattle for many thousands of years. And they originally started doing that not for the milk, but for the meat and hides, because, you know, those domesticated animals were useful. Okay, so they did that. And so just imagine that in those societies, there were some people who had a gene that allowed them to continue to produce lactase, the enzyme that breaks down lactose, the sugar in milk, past weaning. Now, all mammals drink milk, of course. That's what makes us mammals as infants.
Right.
But most mammals stop being able to break down that milk sugar after they're weaned. They just lose the ability to produce the enzyme. But there's variation in all populations, and in humans there's variation. There would have been variation in the ability to maintain lactase past weaning. The people that could do that and the people that could then consume dairy without having these bad digestive side effects were at an advantage, both because they had an additional source of nutrients and possibly, people have suggested, because they had another source of uncontaminated fluid. You know, milk is a liquid, and it's possible that, you know, uncontaminated or unpolluted water was at a premium in some of these societies. Okay, so those people are consuming dairy safely. They then survive and reproduce better than the people that can't consume dairy.
Wow.
Because they're you know, just having a few more kids that survive, or, you know, they're just doing that much better. Well, that in turn means that the genes for lactase persistence are becoming more prevalent in the population, and that then encourages cattle herding, because you're really getting a lot out of keeping cattle. And then the more you keep cattle, the more the selection is for having the genes for lactase persistence. And in parts of the world where humans were herding cattle then, we had this interplay between the culture of keeping cows or other milk-producing animals and having those genes. So you have a coevolution going on between the way people behave, namely herding cattle,
right,
and the way their genes were changing. And so in people from those parts of the world, both in parts of Africa and in Northern Europe and a couple other places throughout the globe, there's a reasonable number of people, not everybody, and it's interesting to see that, you know, it's not 100% of people from Northern Europe or 100% of people from those parts of Africa where there was cattle herding, but a reasonable proportion of people now have lactase persistence genes. So they can consume dairy safely. Now, I should hasten to point out that this just has to do with lactase and the ability to break down lactose. There's also milk allergies that some people have, and those are different, and those are controlled by different genes. But this is just the ability to break down lactose. And so this, to me, you know, it's truly remarkable that we now have the tools to look at the genome and say, well, what genes have changed? And we know what genes they are. And the really coolest part of this is that if you look at the genes that have changed in different parts of the world where people have herded dairy animals historically, it turns out that it's different genes in different places, but they have the same effect. So there's been convergent evolution on the ability to break down lactose, but it's through different pathways in different places, and we now can understand that, which I just think is utterly cool.
Well, you know what else I thought was really cool that you point out? That we think of ourselves as so different, you know, humans, like, well, I'm so much different than that person and this person. But the reality is when compared to the large apes, which we apparently splintered off from at some point in the past, we really are very homogenous in our DNA, because you can take two chimpanzees from the same area, you said in the book, and they'll have strikingly different DNA. But most humans, the DNA is pretty much the same.
Yeah, and this actually points to another common, you know, misunderstanding that people have about genetic similarity and evolution. So that's absolutely true that human beings are more similar to each other than any two chimpanzees are similar to each other. It has to do with your evolutionary history. So if you've been through a bottleneck, in other words, a period where there was a relatively small population that then started spreading throughout the world and, you know, people were interbreeding, then you cut out, as you pass through that bottleneck, you cut out a lot of the genetic variation that was previously there. Now, some of that ends up getting restored through mutation and, you know, other sources, but generally speaking, yeah, human beings are surprisingly like each other. At the same time, I don't want to make too much of that because, you know, you also talk about, you know, humans being, you know, 98% like chimpanzees. Well, that's true too, but you know, we're really an awful lot like, you know, geraniums or, you know, pit bulls. So, and you can calculate those percentages in part because all life is related to all other life. We are all descended from a common ancestor, and what that means is that we're carrying around in us some genes that are like the genes that bacteria have. We're carrying around some genes that are like the ones in all other mammals. We're carrying genes around that are like fish. And so it's this sequence of changes that are building on what happened before that mean human beings and no other, and also all other organisms are never, you know, it's not like you start fresh and you say, okay, I'm living in the desert and I'm going to start from scratch and I'm going to build an animal that's going to be perfectly adapted to living in the desert. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
You're starting from what came before. And, you know, if you want to talk about vertebrate organisms like people, then, you know, we kind of started with fish. So we've got a lot of things in our bodies that are remnants from being an ancestral fish. You know, Neil Shubin has this great book called Your Inner Fish in which he talks about exactly that.
Yeah. I've actually seen a documentary about it. It's so amazing. They tried to illustrate the evolutionary process of what we are today coming from within the oceans. And it was like, I'd never heard that concept before, and I watched it, and I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. You know?
Well, and it really underscores this idea that it's fruitless to try and have this feeling that, oh, it was way better at this point in time or that point in time, because, as I say, you know, and admittedly it's tongue-in-cheek, you know, if you want to be nostalgic for being a hunter-gatherer, you know, on the plains of Africa, say, you know, 20,000 years ago, well, maybe you should, you know, were those people nostalgic for what it was like when human beings were scavengers rather than hunters? So instead of, you know, the idea is that people originally started out taking kills from other predators, and then eventually we started being able to hunt our own prey. But, you know, you could have made the same argument. You know, we're really adapted for this scavenging thing, this whole hunting business. It's risky. It's a lot of work. You know, let's just go back to the stealing from lions.
Yeah, where do you, right. I can see the conversations now. Two Neanderthals sitting on a rock. Ugh, I miss when we used to eat our own poop.
So let us hasten to point out, because I have found that sometimes people really lack a little sense of humor about this. You know, no, really, tongue in cheek, I understand, we're not really saying that. But, you know, again, taken to its logical extreme, you could imagine, or for that matter, you know, the whole bipedal thing, in many ways, you're on really, you know, no pun intended, solid ground if you want to argue that being bipedal was a bad idea for people.
Really?
You know, it makes it really hard to have kids. Childbirth is with a for a large brain infant, you just can't arrange a pelvis on a bipedal skeleton that will work as well for childbirth as you can a pelvis on a quadrupedal skeleton.
Right.
It's just, you know, the way it is. But it's just pointless to say, oh, it would have been better if we just stayed quadrupedal. That's
no.
Not how it works.
Well, you know, and I want to talk about rapid evolution for a second because I want people to understand something about you as a professor as well. You didn't set out to challenge the whole paleo movement. You were actually studying some crickets. I think was it in Texas that you had them? I'm trying to think where.
Hawaii. They've been introduced to Hawaii. They also occur in some other parts of the world. But
the phenomenon of rapid evolution. Talk about that.
Yeah. So biologists are becoming increasingly aware that this idea that everyone used to have that evolution takes millions and millions of years and it's always very slow and always very gradual is in fact not the case, that there's lots and lots of instances of so-called contemporary, some people call it contemporary evolution, some people call it evolution on ecological timescales. The point is that you've got real genetic changes happening within, say, 100 generations or even less. And I found an instance of that in some insect crickets that I was studying in Hawaii. And that got me interested in the whole idea about rapid evolution, and I started reading about more instances of that occurring. It turns out it's a big concern from a conservation and biodiversity standpoint because human beings induce rapid evolution in a lot of the foods that we consume.
Right.
And for example, there's a thing called fisheries-induced evolution in which our fishing has caused major changes in the genetics of the wild species that we're catching. I'm not talking about domestication. I'm talking about when people go out and they use, you know, either lines or nets or whatever to catch, say, cod, for example. When you do that, you mostly take the bigger, older individuals.
Right.
And that's, you know, because that's what people want. Well, if you take the bigger, older individuals from the population before they've had a chance to mostly reproduce, what you're doing is selecting, again, there's all this standing variation. There's some individuals that would reproduce earlier at a smaller size, some individuals that would reproduce later at a larger size. There's always all this variation. If you selectively remove the bigger individuals, then somebody who gets sexually mature at a very small size before they're likely to be caught and has all their babies at a small size before they're likely to be caught is going to become more prevalent in the population.
Right.
And so it's not like being sexually mature smaller is better, except in the context where you've got a predator, namely humans, that are removing the bigger, older individuals. And so you get a genetic shift, and you've got whole populations where there simply aren't those big individuals anymore. It's not that we've just removed them and so they're not left. You're not producing any more big individuals. And those sorts of changes are at least thought to be responsible for the decline in a lot of major fisheries. So, you know, the cod industry, of course, has collapsed, and, you know, it's possible that this rapid evolution is one of the contributors.
That's amazing. We have to take a break. When we come back, I want to just kind of put this into perspective, something that I was talking with Marlene off the air about, you know, there is evolution occurring right now in front of our eyes. I want to talk about this when we come back, but you need to get this book. It's called Paleo Fantasy. What evolution really tells us about sex, diet, and how we live. It's a fantastic book for all of us to read. Again, applies a lot of critical thinking, not tied up in emotional connections to a lot of propaganda. Great book. Get it at Amazon.com. We'll be right back.
Train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about
Kinetic Cream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetic Cream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Electronic muscle stimulation is state-of-the-art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial-grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh-looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RG Cell banner ad today.
Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a one-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding. New from Rob Ray, author of The Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes The Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplementation, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com. Today.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest is Marlene Zook. We're talking about her book, Paleo Fantasy. So I had a couple epiphanies while I was reading the book. First of all, behavior drives evolution. Marlene, I'm a strong believer in the idea that libido in concert with spermatogenesis may be a greater indicator of your longevity ability than anything else, because we as a species have one job, really. It's not anything to do with Maslow's rules. It's just have a baby and die, and that's it, and to promote the furthering of the species. So if you understand that, then the single greatest job that we have is to have that baby, and protecting our ability to have offspring is a critical component of the organism. And so I've been promoting this, concept for about a year now that, if you have no libido, you need to find out what's going on with your body, because usually it's our environmental signals. You're telling your body it's not a good time to have a baby. And as we age, we normally lose the ability to have babies and our libido drops. Hence, 2007, I became a devotee of hormone replacement therapy. So then it dawned on me, I thought, wait a minute, evolution is happening right now. 1,000 years from now, they're going to look back and they go, well, at this point in time, we had a faction of the human race that started to explore and use hormone replacement therapy, which changed the complete trajectory of their life and the ability for them to have offspring later on in life. So it really is still going on, right?
Well, evolution is definitely still going on. I quote an anthropologist in the book who, when asked, as we almost always are, this is the big question that everybody's interested in, well, but are humans still evolving, because they think, well, we've got modern medical care, we've got all of the contraception, there's all these things that should change the way humans are the way humans are responding to their environment. And, you know, her answer is another question, namely, is everybody having the same number of children, which is kind of what you were getting at, that from an evolutionary perspective, it's all about the perpetuation of genes. And so, in fact, if you're in lousy physical condition and end up having a lot of kids that pass on your genes, then they're going to pass on whatever genes you've got, whether those are for, you know, being in good shape or not. So yeah, you're right. Reproduction is sort of the be-all and end-all. The hormone replacement therapy is an interesting point, though, because remember, the only way it's going to work is if we have changes in the gene pool of the population. If people are doing things behaviorally or people are doing things that change what's happening within their lifetime, they can change what they personally do, but unless it changes the number of copies of their genes they're leaving, then it's not going
to
be evolution.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. The hormone replacement therapy has enabled people, men, to father children later in life, which means that, and I know that the germline of the woman is really more predominant in this sort of a scenario than the men, but these men are fathering children later on in life as a result of HRT.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So what it would change is that depending on the genetic characteristics of those men, at least in theory, you could imagine that that's going to end up altering the genetic composition of, you know, the population. The other thing, though, to remember about contemporary human evolution is this question about are all people having the same number of children? Well, they're not, and for a lot of reasons. For one thing, we tend to have a very Western-centric view of this. There are people in lots and lots of parts of the world that neither use contraception nor have access to Western medicine. And so for them, the playing field's very, very different.
Well, and here's something that I've said that I know I've gotten a lot of backflack from some people in the audience. You know, there's an obesity epidemic going on, and people are younger and younger, developing diseases like diabetes and so on. And when you become ill like that, quite often fertility becomes a challenge. And so we have a lot of people having to go to fertility clinics just to get pregnant and so on. And I said one day, you know, this is just another form of evolutionary selection pressure. These people are going to not have children. They're going to die off, and they're not going, and their contribution to the genetic gene pool further on up the road is going to be gone. And so the question I have for you is, what we're doing in modern medicine today, is it actually a bad thing when we look at genetics? Like, in other words, if, and this is a horrible thing to say, because we in the animal kingdom we could say this, but with people we can't. It's politically incorrect. But if people are frail and sickly, isn't it better that they don't procreate and they just kind of wash their genes out?
Well, people have said this for a long, long time, you know, back hundreds of years, you know, back at least 100 years, and the so-called eugenics movement, you know, actually promoted this idea about, you know, selective breeding of people, which is just, you know, I mean, not only is it ethically absolutely unacceptable, it really wouldn't work, because the way evolution acts is not to sort of, it goes back to what I said before, that as long as you're having copies of your genes, then the other characteristics that are associated with it are going to kind of come and go. So you can't say, oh, that person has genes that are making them fat, and they're, you know, and but therefore if they can't get pregnant, then all of the genes associated with making them fat are going to die out of the population. It's just not that simple.
Gotcha.
And plus, that you have to assume the environment's going to stay the same through time, which it's not. So you can't ever say, oh, the genes. So diabetes is a great example of that, where, at least in part, as you know, diabetes is, you know, you can have a genetic predisposition to it.
Yeah, but most people don't. Most people just,
sure,
they just overeat, they don't train, they don't exercise, there's no, I mean, they're giving themselves diabetes.
Where we think this might have come from is from people having so-called thrifty genes, and I'm sure you've heard this.
Yeah, Fox
this
pig.
This idea that some people, depending on, again, their ancestry, are from parts of the world where there were these sort of boom and bust food availabilities over many generations. What that selects for is people who are really good at grabbing on to fat and not letting it go in times of famine. That's fabulous for you in that environment, and those people survived and left more offspring.
Right, right.
Change the environment, put you in a place where there's calorie dense and often nutrient poor food available all the time, and it's a disaster physiologically. But you can't say that somebody's genes are better or worse. It's just different under different circumstances. And so what we can moderate is the way that people who have thrifty genes are going to respond to their environment. And we're even discovering that some of that programming or predisposition happens prenatally, so that mothers, for instance, under certain circumstances, let's say they're, you know, deprived of, if they're in, you know, war situations or something where they're pregnant but they don't get very much nutrients, their offspring are going to be more likely to have a predisposition to diabetes or some other kinds of diseases like that. And from an evolutionary standpoint, it makes sense because it's as if the body is saying, oops, there's hardly any food around, and when my baby's born, there's going to be hardly any food around. And so for my baby to survive, it's going to have to be, you know, essentially insulin resistant.
Right. Right. No, I get it. I mean, it's, and that's why I keep coming back to the whole, the body is perfect. The body is doing, when we look at diseases, we, instead of trying to look at diseases and go, oh, how do we cure it? We need to go, what is the body trying to tell us about our environment? What are we doing that's causing the body to change and do this? Because it's obviously a protective mechanism. Let's talk a little bit real quick about another movement that's evolving from the paleo arena, and that is the exercise. You know, there's all these notions that, like hunter-gatherers, we should be doing things, getting up and running around and so on and so forth. Is there any evidence that activity or inactivity has changed the way we have evolved?
So we can certainly ask questions about what kinds of activity, you know, early humans were engaging in. And I know there's something of a discussion about whether, you know, sort of long distance running, you know, i.e. marathon style, is something that was ancestral for us as opposed to just, you know, short intense bursts of exercise. And so there's that. It's absolutely, I think, not controversial to point out that a sedentary lifestyle where you're sitting all day is bad for you. But you don't need to think about evolution to do that. You can look at modern data from, you know, lots and lots of sources that will tell you exactly the same thing. The question about the sprints and long distance running is an interesting one, and I got quite convinced by the data from people who advocate this idea about persistence running, or persistence hunting, that human beings evolved not just as walkers but as runners, and what we were doing running was chasing down our prey. And so, you know, from what I understand about that, it's actually pretty convincing. If you look at a human skeleton, for instance, next to the skeleton of one of our great ape relatives, the way our heads are set on our necks and the way our joints are arranged is better suited for rapid movement in running than the apes are, and so we seem to be a running species. Now that doesn't say that every single person has to be running marathons all the time, but it does suggest that running long distances may not be something that's as unnatural, quote unquote, as some people might believe.
In fact, in your book, you talk about the first evidence of this, and I want to say I don't remember the name of the species that they named it, but I remember the second portion of the Latin name was like ergaster or something like that, or
Homo ergaster. So it's another member of the genus Homo, which is our genus, of course. We're Homo sapiens.
And that was the first one that they said gave evidence to the fact that we ran.
Yeah, and you know, so what's fun is that you can look. What I really like is that scientists can look at evidence from a bunch of different sources. So you can look at skeletal evidence from fossils. You can look at the way our great ape relatives move around, although, of course, we split off we and they split off from a common ancestor quite a long time ago, but still it's informative. And you can look at the way contemporary humans who grow up without shoes and without, you know, the kind of constrictions on or constraints on exercise that some of us have, how they move. And, you know, the results are pretty interesting. The whole barefoot running thing I find quite convincing, again, because if you look at the way people run with shoes and the way people run without shoes, they tend to have different gaits. And there's not all that much evidence suggesting that wearing heavily structured shoes prevents you from having injuries. But the real point here, and what I got very intrigued with doing the research about exercise, is that there's always going to be an interaction between you and your environment. So if you imagine a little baby and you say, okay, I could either put those adorable tiny little shoes on this baby, or I could let this baby, you know, move around and walk on the, you know, bare ground and just grow up that way. Well, most people would say, oh, the foot is going to grow, you know, develop in its most natural way without shoes. But really, the foot's going to develop differently no matter what. It's going to be affected by the kind of surface that it's moving on, and it's going to be affected by, you know, the temperature. It's going to be affected by everything else that the body is doing. So there's always this interaction between your environment and the way you end up being, just like there is if you wear shoes. That's just one aspect of changing your environment.
Right. And I am proud to say that I'm wearing my five fingers today because I did run this morning. So there you go. All right, look, we have to take our last commercial break. When we come back, I'd like to address the whole notion of sexuality and child rearing. We're talking with Marlene Zook. The book is Paleo Fantasy, What Evolution Really Tells Us About Sex, Diet, and How We Live. This is a great book. I promise you that if you buy this book, you'll be very, very pleased. If not, I'll refund your money. Go get it. We'll be right back.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to altrientc.com. That's altrientc.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to altrientc.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrient C. 21st century vitamin C.
Everyone wants growth hormone because growth hormone works. Now AgeForce is offering a buy one, get one free on their most popular transdermal patch. The power patch contains 25 milligrams of real somatropin per patch. It delivers real competent human growth hormone right to your bloodstream without the discomfort of injections. There's never been a better time to see what the power patch can do for you. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today. This offer ends soon. Get your growth hormone the AgeForce way. Power Patch.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RG Cell Super Stem Cell Support. RG Cell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RG Cell banner ad today.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. WiseChoiceMedicine.net. CanSee Eye Drops. The name says it all.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Sega!
Welcome back. I know I wouldn't want to go back to paleo times. I'd have to give up my peptides, my testosterone. You know, I think this is the most exciting time to be alive. I'll tell you why. Because we can actually apply critical thinking and use all the different things that are beneficial, whether it be raw unpasteurized milk, grass-fed, grass-finished beef, or even pharmaceutical modalities that make sense. So I definitely wouldn't want to go back in time, Marilyn. Marlene, I like where I am right now. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about one of the things I found really interesting was that Neanderthals were apparently very promiscuous, and we share some genes. Many of us share some genes with Neanderthals, right?
Yeah, and increasingly, I joke in the book that Neanderthals kind of got a little makeover. That for a long time, it was synonymous with, you know, talking about somebody who was clueless and stupid and, you know, slow. And then all of a sudden, we started making these new discoveries about Neanderthals and how they were, you know, more they used tools. They you know, might have communicated more. And then the clincher was, of course, that they had sex with people. And so once we found out they had sex with people, we had to kind of hastily remodel them. Otherwise, you know, everybody was going to start getting a little embarrassed or something. So an anthropologist who has a blog I really like, John Hawks, maintains what he calls the Neanderthal anti-defamation files, where he tries to keep track of all this stuff and how much it changes. I mean, mostly it just underscores the fact that there's so much that we're still learning about human evolution and about human history. So I'll second your thing of not wanting to go back to paleo times with the fact that I think this is just an amazing time to be an evolutionary biologist and to be learning about evolution, because we have some awesome new tools that we just didn't have even maybe 5 or 10 years ago in terms of looking at the human genome. So people are able to do a lot of things that they simply couldn't do before. With this book, more than anything else I've written, I kept feeling like it was hard for me to let go of the manuscript, because almost literally every day I would see a paper and say, oh, but that just came out. This is so cool. I have to include that in the book. And, you know, things are really changing very, very fast.
Were we always monogamous, you think?
So it depends what you mean by we, and it depends what you mean by always, which is the scientist's answer to everything is always it depends. With regard to our, you know, the way our sex lives were, our love lives or our family lives or what have you, I there's often kind of two paleo fantasies, if you want to call them that. One of them is that, well, way back when humans were very promiscuous and everybody had multiple sexual partners, and then monogamy was culturally imposed on people extremely recently, and it goes against our nature, so that's a really common one. Another one is that women have always wanted to be monogamous, but that men have to, you know, spread their seed, and so men would be better off if there wasn't monogamy, but, you know, this is something that's from, you know, pressure from women. And in both cases, they're forgetting something that I refer to, again, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, as they're forgetting the really important F-word. And, you know, no, it's not that F-word, get your mind out of the gutter. What I'm talking about is what evolutionary biologists refer to as fitness, which is also not what, you know, people talk about in terms of physical fitness or, you know, working out or what have you. It has to do with that same thing we've been talking about, leaving genes in succeeding generations. And with humans, you can't just impregnate somebody and then, you know, go off and leave. And you can't, you know, we're not reptiles. We don't just lay our eggs in a corner and then, you know, walk away.
Right.
We have babies that require an enormous amount of care and effort and energy as they're growing up.
Right.
And that care and effort and energy often can't be provided by just one person or just, you know, just the mother alone. So in a species where the offspring require lots and lots of care, that's where we tend to see more monogamy. And that's what makes us think that at least some degree of cooperative care of the offspring, and it doesn't have to be the father, but oftentimes it is, some degree of cooperative care of the offspring was in our evolutionary history. And so that means two things. First of all, it means that the likelihood of everybody, you know, just having sex with everybody else and no one really cared about who was fathering the babies was is probably inaccurate, because
yeah, that didn't happen, you know, until the 70s.
speaking of someone who was, kind of a teenager during that time, I'm really taking the fifth on that. But certainly, it means that if everybody's having sex with everybody else, then, you know, somebody's got to take care of the kids, and so, you know, you need to include that. And it also means that from a male perspective, just running around and, you know, spreading your seed isn't going to do any good unless those
seeds
kids,
grow. Right.
Those copies of your genes survive and reproduce themselves.
Right.
And so you really need to take that part of it into account. This image, and that also, this idea that babies need a lot of care from multiple people, and that may have been in our evolutionary history, also cast some doubt on this image that, oh, the sort of 50s style nuclear family with, you know, mom and dad and the kids, and they were completely independent, you know, and they could survive on their own, and that's really the natural family unit. Well, maybe not, because in a lot of both contemporary hunter-gatherer societies, as well as insofar as we can, you know, figure out from other sorts of fossil evidence, babies really take, you know, an awful lot of care from adults. And Sarah Blaffer-Hurdy, an anthropologist from UC Davis, has postulated that human babies are really best with three reliable caregivers,
mm-hmm.
not one, the mother, not even two, the mother and father, but three. And so that babies seem to thrive best when there's three adult, well, or three caregivers. They don't have to be adults. They can be, say, older siblings.
Well,
in fact,
there was a study published during this past summer that indicated that menopause was an evolutionary footprint as well. The onset of menopause, because when the mother of the daughter having the baby had to go through menopause sooner so she could not have her own offspring any longer so that she could help attend to this baby, because that's what they said. It takes at least three people to raise
right.
this baby. So they said that
right.
the time for menopause actually changed.
Yeah, and so the idea is that menopause is not sort of a weird artifact of physiology breaking down, that it may be an adaptive thing for humans, because with humans, grandmothers can help contribute to the perpetuation of their genes, namely their grandchildren's genes, by helping to care for those grandchildren. There is some controversy about that, and so the jury's not completely in on that hypothesis, but I think it does point to the need to look at characteristics of humans throughout their lifespan and not just at a particular point in time. The menopause thing is also really worth thinking about, because a lot of times people will say, well, you don't need to talk about the evolution of menopause because, of course, no one ever lived that long, you know, back in the day. You're always reading these statistics about how in ancient Rome, you know, the average life expectancy was, you know, 37 or, you know.
Yeah, but there were plenty of people who made it into sixth, seventh, and eighth decade of life. It just wasn't the
norm,
that's all.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. But I do find that that's something people often don't quite grasp, that what you need for, you know, with a low life expectancy, what that often means is that there's a lot of childhood mortality, often due to
pulling the numbers
disease.
Down. And I've talked about that here on the show numerous times, when they say, well, we're living longer today. Well, no, we've never gotten past 120 years old. Many people have lived into the seventh, eighth, and ninth decade of their lives. But when you look at mortality records, when you put the deaths of children in the late 1800s and early 1900s, it pulls the number down dramatically.
Yep. No. So what I say in the book is that, you know, old age is not a novelty; it's commonness. Is.
Right. Right. Ah, I like that. I like that. Listen, I want to say something as we close the interview. For those out there who are part of the paleo community that have heard anything about this book, and any of those things being negative, I can tell you that there's no truth to that whatsoever. I will tell you this: I came away feeling smarter after reading this book, which is the best feeling you can have when you read a book. And I came away feeling like, because I am not a zealot tied by emotion to a paradigm, I am looking for the truth. And like many of you looking for the truth, you cannot find the truth if you follow the paradigm when there are things that say the paradigm might be wrong in this area and this area. You have to accept the truth as the truth. And this book is fantastic. It really, really is. I really love this book. I love reading it. I'll probably read it a second time. Because there were some passages in there that I really got a kick out of. Namely, there are people in New York. Now, I'm a big believer in phlebotomy, by the way. I think that you should give blood once in a while because it kind of helps rid metabolic waste. But I read in your book that there are people in New York who do it because they believe that back in the caveman day, a saber-toothed tiger, bleeding was common, so you should bleed once in a while. I thought that was hilarious. So,
well, yes, although I hasten to point out that I do think even the author of the book, of the New York Times article recognized that this was a little kind of out there.
But. Yeah, yeah, but I am a big believer in phlebotomizing, especially for postmenopausal women, and there is some evidence that metal that builds up in cells, which can hasten disease, can be evacuated over time with regular visits to give blood. And giving blood to the Red Cross is a good thing anyway. So, you know, I ask my audience to do it as regular as possible. But anyway, this is a fantastic book, and I really think everybody should read it, including those of you who are committed to the paleo movement. Because don't you want to give your readers and your listeners the right information? Read this book, Paleo Fantasy. It's fantastic. Marlene, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, so stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to have Matt Chan and Cheryl Brost on as we talk about two paleo warriors, what it takes to be a paleo warrior. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What's the scientific approach to the course? And the force is centrifugal. Trivical. Can you find your way through the lyrics that be catching up? Throw another rhyme across the room, they be fetching them. You may take a loss to the master, and I throw his crazy clothes and he knows I be plastering.
The big stuff.
Uh-huh.
Who do you think you are?
Master Ace.
The big stuff.
Uh-huh.
You're never gonna get my love.
Hey.
The big stuff.
Uh-huh.
Who do you think you are?
Master Ace.
Everyone wants growth hormone because growth hormone works. Now, AgeForce is offering a buy one, get one free on their most popular transdermal patch. The Power Patch contains 25 milligrams of real somatropin per patch. It delivers real, competent human growth hormone right to your bloodstream without the discomfort of injections. There's never been a better time to see what the Power Patch can do for you. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today. This offer ends soon. Get your growth hormone the AgeForce way. Power Patch. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometime pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rubbed Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RGCell banner ad today.
Have you ever been let down by so-called nitric oxide muscle pump products before? Well, prepare to be shocked. Vengeance is like nothing you've ever tried before. Vengeance leverages several different scientifically proven technologies to deliver what some users say are painfully explosive pumps. If you are satisfied with nitric oxide products that make you wonder if they're working, move on. But if you want a muscle pump that you'll not only feel, but others will see, train with a vengeance. Go to xfmuscle.com today and get vengeance.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back. I don't think any other physical culture movement has had the momentum or the meteoric rise in awareness than CrossFit. It's doing more for physical culture today than anything else. So many people who never even wanted to go to the gym are involved in CrossFit and changing their lives, changing their bodies. And there's nothing more exciting than watching the athletes at the annual World CrossFit Games. And we have two individuals who make it to those competitions with great regularity. The first is Matt Chan. How you doing, Matt?
Quite well. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. And then, of course, Cheryl Brost. How you doing, Cheryl?
Very well, Carl. Thank you.
Okay. So before we get started with how you train and what motivates you and so on, I want to get your individual stories because I want to start with Cheryl, too. Cheryl, can you say your age, please? I never want to say a woman's age. Isn't that funny? I feel weird saying, how old are you, Cheryl?
How old am I? Well, I still feel like a kid, but I'm getting up towards the middle age. I'm 41. I'll be 42 in May.
Okay.
So it makes me kind of the old lady of the competitor group.
But, I mean, you've made it to the CrossFit World Games 3 years in a row. Is that correct?
Yes. I've been fortunate enough to be able to do that.
And that's really very impressive. That's very, very impressive. Now,
well, you know, CrossFit works. What can I say?
Yeah, no
it's
doubt.
It's a wonderful way to do fitness. It's a wonderful community of people. And, you know, you just have a blast doing it. So I think when people enjoy what they're doing, they excel at it. And it's just tons of fun.
Now, Matt, you're no 20-year-old yourself, right?
No, I'm not. I just turned 35 in February, so I'm definitely up there as well. And like Cheryl said, I feel like a kid. You know, this stuff is it's revitalized my energy and enthusiasm towards fitness, and I feel like I'm in better shape now than I was in my 20s. In fact, I know I am.
Now, mm-hmm. I've watched CrossFit. Now, keep in mind that I follow several physical culture disciplines. But I have almost been afraid to test myself with CrossFit. Perhaps I'm afraid to find out I don't have the conditioning I thought I had. But what would you say to people out there who have been standing on the sidelines? And we'll start with you, Matt, and then we'll go to Cheryl. What would you say to the men out there who've been standing on the sidelines watching CrossFit, who are maybe, you know, they're in the gym now, maybe they're powerlifters, they train in a strength discipline of some sort. They do some moderate cardio. What would you say to them to push them off the edge and say, give CrossFit a try?
I think there's two things I would kind of start with. You know, number one, are you happy with your current program? And if you are, you know what? Whatever that program is, I'm sure that if it makes you happy and you're exercising on a daily basis, it's great. But the thing about it is most people go to the gym and they really don't know what they're doing. And they don't have direction, and they don't, you know, really see the results they want to. And one of the greatest parts of CrossFit is that we've got instructors around the world that are very intelligent, that are prescribing constantly varied functional movements with intensity, and it's getting the people the results. There's no guesswork whether or not you're on the right program. You see the results, and you see them quickly. The second part is the community. The community is such a valuable part of CrossFit. When you don't feel like going in to the gym, people try to find you. They're like, where have you been? You need to be in the gym. You missed Fran today. And there's something very valuable about that. And we encourage each other, and that's not something that you see in a typical a gym setting, a global gym style setting.
Okay, now from the woman's perspective, Cheryl, because we have more and more women that are listening to the show, and one of the things I say on the air regularly is that women outlive men, but women lose the ability to be ambulatory later in life, and they end up in institutions because they fall a couple times, and then the kids say, hey, Mom, you can't live by yourself anymore. So women should be focused more so on strength training than they do, but they don't. They look at Pilates and Zumba and stuff like that. What would you say to women out there who maybe aren't even in the gym training with regularity to entice them to give CrossFit a try?
Well, what I'd say to them is I would actually invite them to come and maybe watch a class, check it out. You know, I know, and my husband's not a woman, but I know with him, you know, I started CrossFit before he did, and for 3 months I talked and talked his ear off about it, but he wouldn't come, you know, give it a try. And it wasn't until he actually was in a setting where it was actually my first competition for CrossFit, and he got to see CrossFit in motion and the community behind it. And that, for him, really piqued his interest. So I think, you know, a lot of people maybe that haven't played sports throughout their life maybe don't quite understand that aspect of our sport. And for those that do, it's like, oh, my gosh, I've been missing that. And CrossFit kind of provides that competitive atmosphere for those that have played sports in their life. For those that haven't, you know, we got tons of those in our own gym at home. And, you know, they are just growing by leaps and bounds because they've never put themselves in their bodies and challenged themselves that way. And it's just really neat to see. And, you know, being in mid-40s, close to early 40s, I guess, gal, I think I get a lot of messages from people across the world, really, that, you know, they see me compete, and it kind of like for them, it's like it helps them, give them motivation, inspire them, because, you know, here I'm an old lady.
Yeah, right.
So
you don't look like
an old
lady.
You know, and I think a lot of, another thing is a lot of women are really concerned about, you know, what their body's going to do. They're going to get big and bulky. You know, I always try to tell them when they have that concern, have you ever seen the picture of what a pound of fat looks like to a pound of muscle?
Right.
And, you know, it's not really about how much the scale says, but, you know, how you feel and how your body performs and moves and functions.
Right.
And you bring up a really good point about as women age and, you know, unfortunately we do outlast our men. And oftentimes we, you know, live for many, many years alone. And so it's important for our bone structure to be very strong. And it's been proven, obviously, with weightlifting type activities, that increases our bone mass and makes us stronger. And my husband and I, actually own and operate a 55 and older community. So we see people, you know, in their later years and, you know, either the regression that they make as they age. And oftentimes, you know, when they have the falls and stuff,
bingo,
such with broken hips.
The number one reason that's the number one reason somebody's institutionalized is a fall. That's it. Number one.
Exactly.
It's not because they can't cook their eggs in the morning. It's not because they can't wash their clothes. It's because they fall. And then that's it.
Yeah.
That pretty much heralds the, and you know what, Cheryl? I'm not too far away from that age. Maybe I'll come and live at your community pretty soon. As soon as I can't deadlift 600 pounds anymore, that's where I'm going. Hey, listen, let's take a quick commercial break. I got lots of questions. We're talking to Matt Chand and Cheryl Brost. They are both CrossFit warriors. They are also Altrient sponsored athletes, and we're going to be talking more about their careers when we come back. This is Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Never before.
before, has an anti-estrogen been so powerful? The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit ironmaglabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at ironmaglabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a one-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding.
If you want to outlast, out-muscle and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to AltrientC.com. That's AltrientC.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to AltrientC.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrient C, 21st Century Vitamin C.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Soldier boy.
Welcome back.
Hey, I got the new damn for y'all, Carl the Soldier Boy.
If you want to learn more about Matt Chan, you can go to his website, which is CrossFit Verve, V-E-R-V-E. If you live in the Mile High City area in Denver, you can go train there. And then if you want to learn more about Cheryl Bross, you can go to her website, which is her name, Cheryl, C-H-E-R-Y-L, Brost, B-R-O-S-T.com. All right, so Matt, How did you get involved in CrossFit? I mean, you were an athletic person to begin with, weren't you a swimmer? Matt, are you there? Uh-oh. Cheryl, are you there?
I'm here.
Uh-oh. I think we lost Matt.
Uh-oh.
Okay. All right, here's what we'll do. Let's talk to you right now, and then we'll go back and pick him up.
Okay.
How did you get involved in CrossFit?
Well, I started CrossFit in December 2009. I had a friend, sometime that fall, maybe September, October, she started to tell me about CrossFit, and a friend of hers told her. And this gal I was playing City League soccer with, and actually our two boys were playing on a competitive club soccer team together as well. And so she was telling me about it and said, Cheryl, you just got to come give this a try. I know you'll love it.
So I finally took her up on the opportunity in December and of 2009 and did my first workout and signed up right on the spot. So it's been no looking back since then.
Now, when you get out of the gym and you train, maybe this was something that happened from the very beginning, did you feel really energized? Did you feel like, wow, this is really for me? Or was it something that you had to work hard to become accustomed to?
You know, I was always, with my training for sports, you know, used to putting hours in the gym or on the soccer field or basketball court. So I was used to that environment. In fact, I was kind of missing it. With City League Soccer, we never practice. You just show up and play a game, and that's it. And which is great. It's good fun. But I was kind of missing that more daily routine and regimen. So this just seemed real natural to me. And I didn't start out, when I started CrossFit, I'm not the level I'm at now, of course. It took me a while. It's been 3 years in the building to get where I'm at today, and I'm in the best shape of my life. And, you know, here I'm a collegiate athlete, and that's kind of crazy to say. I'm in my 40s and the best shape of my life. But yeah, I truly am. And I'm still setting PRs today. And,
What is it like going to the World CrossFit Games? Is it crazy? Is it like, are you just so jazzed, or you get nerve-wracked with the idea of going there and competing against all these athletes? And the athletes are getting better and better because CrossFit is growing more and more.
It's a wonderful, wonderful experience. I mean, sure, yeah, you get nerves and you get anxious of what's to come, what's ahead of you. But being amongst such a skilled group of athletes, and the great thing about that is not that they're skilled, but the fact that they are just human beings like you and I, and that they are just salt of the earth people. And so it makes your time there just really enjoyable because they're fun people to be around with, you know. I'm just going to go out and lay it on the line out there together.
How what's your training like? How frequently do you train?
I train, 5 to 6 days a week. For sure I have 5, you know, program days, and then 6th day might be an active rest day where I might go for an easy jog or easy swim in the pool, or a bike ride or a hike, you know, just something to get out and get active.
And as you get closer to the world games, do you have to up your training? Do you have to start doing 2-a-days and stuff like that?
You know, we're at the start of the qualifying season. Well, this week is the 5th and final week of the qualifiers for the Open. It's a 3-stage process to get to the World Games. You have the Open, which consists of one workout a week for 5 weeks. And it's a really cool experience. I think there's 138,000 worldwide competing this year.
Wow.
Yeah, it's grown immensely. I think 2 years ago it was 20-some thousand that competed. Last year was 70, just around 70,000. So for that to nearly double, again, is pretty incredible. You know, so my training right now, I probably spend on average about close to 3 hours
every day.
In my training program every day. And as we get closer to our regional competition, of course, you know, each stage gets tougher. I'll definitely start having some more, maybe 2-hour session in the morning and then maybe an hour and a half at night. So,
right.
You know, definitely programming in some double days.
What about your eating regimen? Do you adhere to a certain style of eating? Are you, you know, obviously with the kind of output that you're doing, you cannot exclude carbohydrates from your diet. What type of carbs do you eat?
You know, it's been an interesting evolution, I guess, as I have grown as a CrossFit athlete, experimented with different things. You know, a lot of CrossFit community is a paleo diet, caveman diet, and then you have some of those that are a zone diet followers. And so I've done both, and where I'm at today, I guess what I've decided is that I need to add more carbs into my diet, so I've been doing that this season. You know, some rice, some maybe some angel hair pasta now and then. You know, things that I was avoiding for the last really year and a half or two.
Right.
What
do you notice? You know, what do you notice now that you're starting to integrate those things back in?
Well, I think I find I have more reserves in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you are competing where you have multiple events in a weekend or a week to, you know, give it your all every single event, I think I felt maybe last year maybe I was a little too clean of an eater,
uh-huh.
if you can understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, after 4 grueling days of competition, I maybe need a little bit more fat reserves on my body.
Right, right. Yeah, so, absolutely. And I think that's a, you know, when you're performing the type of routines that they do at the CrossFit Games for days, you really have to look at yourself not so much as exclusively a strength athlete, but an endurance athlete as well. And if you're not getting
exactly.
adequate carbohydrate consumption, even on those days that you're there, you know, you are absolutely going to gas out a lot faster.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Yep. Yep, sweet potatoes is one of my favorites.
I was just going to say, but you know what? You know what I learned? Mm-hmm. I always made sweet potatoes in the microwave. But since I've been with Elisa, she makes them in the oven and wraps them in some foil, and they get so sweet and syrupy when they're in the oven as opposed to the microwave.
You know,
eat them all day.
That's funny you mention that. Yeah, that's funny you mention that. Sometimes, you know, if I'm in a rush and I just need to get something prepared quick, throw it in the microwave, but yeah, the oven is way, way better.
They taste so much better. Now, I know that
you are
an Altrient sponsored athlete, correct?
Yes, I am.
Can you tell me about the Altrient supplements that you take and how you feel they've helped you in your training and in your competition?
Oh, definitely. Altrient has some great products. The Altrient C and Altrient ME, I take both of those. The Altrient C is, you know, 100% pure vitamin C, comes in liposome form, 1,000 milligrams per packet. And then the Altrient ME is their ME stands for metabolic enhancer, and it's their B complex, has other great trace minerals as well in it.
And it has benfontamine in it, which has been known to help stabilize blood sugar levels as well, which is really good stuff.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and I have a good testimony about that as well. So I've been taking Altrient since November of, 11?
Okay.
And, you know, I have, in all that time, you know, and I have 2 children at home, I have yet to have a sick day. So for me, that's just testament to the product itself. I mean, Altrient C is our bodies, you know, most people, I think it's accurate to say that most people, a majority, probably even close to 100%, don't produce vitamin C. So,
right.
You know, we need to get it in our supplementation or through our diet. So the cell restoration, the immunity, you know, it's great for your skin.
Yeah, and you know that's a big deal because professional athletes run their immune system down, are always on the verge of getting sick. We hear this about Olympic athletes, so that is a testament to how well the product works. Considering that you are training the number of hours you're training a day, and you're going to increase your training as we move forward, and that you are having that kind of benefit from taking the Altrient products. Here's what we're going to do.
Yeah, it's a great benefit.
Cheryl, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to get Matt back on the line because he's sitting tight. We're communicating with him, and we're going to find out more about Matt Chan. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. This interview is being made possible by a sponsor of ours, a sponsor that I'm very proud to have on board, and that is the Altrient Company, Altrient C and Altrient ME. I take them both every single day. You should, too. We'll be right back.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to altrientc.com. That's ALTRIENTC.com.
It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to AltriantC.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altriant C. 21st century vitamin C.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else? AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead. I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest Protein Bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest Bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest Bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting SuperHumanRadio.com and clicking the RG Cell banner ad today.
Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. Okay. So now we're going to turn it over to Matt Chan. What we wanted to find out from Matt before we lost him on the phone call, but we have him back online now, was, you know, how did you get into CrossFit, Matt? You were a swimmer originally, weren't you?
Yeah, you know, I grew up swimming on the south side of Chicago through age group swimming all the way up through, you know, until I graduated from high school. And at that point, I went to Western Illinois University where I played water polo. And that was pretty much after my senior year, that was the end of my, my sports life. And I moved to Winter Park, Colorado and became a ski bum for a couple years. And I ended up living there for 7 years, you know, cause I landed a pretty good job in the valley. And one thing led to another, and I ended up working as a firefighter in the Denver area. I went from working in the IT world to working as a firefighter. And
big difference.
Yeah, big difference. And the funny part was, you know, while I was living in Winter Park, you know, I was trying, you know, different programs, you know, that I've read in books or, you know, even stuff like that you find in different men's fitness magazines, and really not a whole lot of success. And when I went to the fire department and I had to go through the academy, I didn't have a whole lot of luck feeling very fit. I was gassed continuously. The minute I would put my bunker gear on and an SCBA on my back and charge into the fire ground, I was gassed. And anybody that's ever put on a mask and tried to breathe that air while you're a little bit panicked, it's not a good feeling.
Right.
So I knew that there were elements of my fitness that I hadn't addressed, and I didn't know where to go. So I, you know, just asked around, and one of the firefighters that was, you know, already on staff, recommended I check out CrossFit. He said he had never done it. I jumped on the website, and I saw four women doing a workout called Angie, and it was 100 pull-ups, 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, and 100 squats done for time. And when you first see that, and you come from kind of like a, you know, a back and buys, chest and tries, you know, you look at that and you're like, that doesn't even make any sense to me. How am I supposed to do 100 pull-ups? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And, they had the video there to prove it, and there were four women that performed 100 kipping pull-ups, 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, and 100 squats.
Did they do them consecutively, or did they do 5, 5, 5, 5, and just keep rotating around?
Yeah, no, they broke them up, but the cool part was there was minimal rest.
Right.
You could tell that they were focusing on trying to finish the workout as quickly as possible, and, I was like, well, I gotta give this a shot. I gotta give it a shot. I can do pull-ups, I can do push-ups, I can do sit-ups, and I can do squats. I'm gonna try it. And it took them under 20 minutes. It took me over 45.
Wow.
And that was a big eye-opening to me. It was like, I can't even do bodyweight exercises. And then I started flipping through, and they incorporate weightlifting, movements I've never even heard of, stuff like the clean jerk and the snatch.
Right.
Coming from a swimming background, that stuff was all foreign to me.
Right.
100% foreign.
Yeah, because to you, the clean and jerk was what you did with your chamois after you wiped off, right? After you dried
exactly.
off, right? Got the water
That's
out
right.
of it.
That's right. So, I mean, like, all these movements were new and interesting. And the cool part was, you know, every day was something different. And you didn't have to think about back and buys, chest and tries, here's my routine. Because, you know, routine was the enemy. And the results I got in the first 3 months of doing CrossFit just blew away what I was doing for the previous 3 to 5 years. Just blew it away. I mean, there was no.
Did you ever think that you would end up becoming a professional athlete within the CrossFit community?
You know, not at all. And, only, I'd say during the last year have I actually truly bought into that CrossFit athletes are professional athletes. You know, I mean, it used to be just a hobby that we would go to regionals, we would go to the games, and it would be more of like a Woodstock of fitness, if you would.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, yeah.
But now it's not that way at all. I mean, I train year round. My peers train year round.
So how do you train? Tell me about your training. So how often do you train year round? And then as you start getting closer and closer to the games, how do you change your training?
Okay, well, my season typically starts right around probably October. The CrossFit games occur in mid July every year, and I take a couple months where I just kind of have fun and do some mountain biking, some climbing, and stuff like that during the summer afterwards. But, you know, right around October, it starts to ramp up a little bit. And the big focus I have in my training is I have to go longer more often. And that doesn't just mean like running, rowing, swimming, and biking. That means I have to, you know, I have to lift weights for a longer period of time. Like, I'll have to do, you know, calisthenics or gymnastics for a longer duration throughout the day because I need to build a larger aerobic base.
Right.
I'm really good with short duration, high power output exercises. I can tough it out with the best of them. But where I lack the abilities is something like a 45 minute of sustained high output of power output. And I'll give you an example. A workout like Murph, which is a well-known hero workout through the CrossFit community. It's run one mile, do do 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 air squats, run 1 mile, all wearing a 20-pound weight vest.
Wow.
Yeah, and you look at that and you're like, well, you know, that's a large task. But that workout has been done right at the bottom of about 30 minutes. It's a little harder for me. It takes me right around 38, but I'm always continually trying to push that longer aerobic effort into the lower times.
Right, right.
So that's early season. And then as the competition season grows and gets nearer, I start to balance my training out a little bit more with some heavier lifts, with some more dynamic lifts like the clean and jerk and the snatch. You know, I always do CrossFit, so I'm always constantly varying the exercises, but there's areas of focus that I have.
Right. CrossFit, I understand that you're not supposed to do the routine, but even in CrossFit, there's specialization that requires some form of routine because you have to become better, perhaps, at executing a lift so you can do more of them within a certain amount of time or more efficiently, because efficiency leads to greater performance more so than strength sometimes. You see these guys that are, you know, that are cleaning and jerking 300-400 pounds. They're 127 pounds, and you're like, wait a minute. And that's not all strength.
Yeah.
A lot of that is technique.
Oh, yes. Carl, you hit the nail on the head, but I got to say this. When you say CrossFit, what you're referring to is competitive CrossFit. I want to make it clear that CrossFit is a program that's accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
And those people that are participating in CrossFit who are new to exercise, those people need to just constantly vary their exercise. They
right.
need to just come in and get a well-rounded fitness by doing CrossFit.
Right.
But competitive athletes, in order to remain competitive, need to establish what are my weaknesses, and they need to attack those weaknesses throughout the year. And that's where you see the difference between a competitive athlete versus a generalist that's just aiming for general physical preparedness.
So what is your nutritional program look like? Are you carb phobic? Obviously, you have to eat some carbs when you're putting out the kind of output. I asked this to Cheryl, and she indicated that she's had to become more friendly to some carbs that she was afraid of before to get greater muscular endurance. How about you? How do you eat?
I eat what's kind of referred to as like a paleo zone style diet. I don't necessarily subscribe entirely to the term paleo. So what I like to just refer to as real food. I like to eat unpackaged fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, and a lot of meat. And I try to do it in specific proportions because it's something that I can repeat on a day-to-day basis. I
right.
know what gets me the results, and I use the zone so that I can repeat that day in and day out.
Yeah.
If my output goes up throughout the week or throughout the season or throughout a training weekend or a competition weekend, I adjust that as necessary. And by using the zone, I can do that very precisely. It's like how a lot of people count calories. The difference is the zone, simply you're also counting each macronutrient.
Right.
You're getting an idea of how much of each macronutrient you're getting.
Yeah, the zone uses a metric called blocks, right? Isn't that what that zone is?
That's
yeah.
That's correct.
And
yep.
now, are you a fan of grass-fed, grass-finished beef, or do you just eat whatever beef you can get at the grocery store?
No, I think you know, personally, I spend a little bit more money on my groceries than just about anything else. So I try to get the best of the best.
Yeah.
So grass-fed, you know, pasture-raised, all that
bingo,
stuff is what I'm after. So, you want to reduce those omega-6s as much as possible, and those meats that are free-roaming and eating grass, that's the best source of you know, meat that you can get. I'm not afraid of carbs either, just like you said Cheryl isn't. I think in order to exercise at a high level, you need to figure out what balance is right for you. But most Americans consume far too many carbs, and that's why we have an obesity epidemic.
Yeah, you know what I love? Like, when people heard that that swimmer, I can't think of his name now. Isn't that sad?
Michael Phelps.
Yeah, when they heard he was eating, like, you know, 5,000-10,000 calories a day, they were like, oh, my God, he eats so much, and look how lean he is. Yeah, he swims 8 hours a day. Jump in a pool and
that's
swim
right.
8 hours a day. You can eat 5,000-10,000 calories a day, too. I mean, people shock me.
You are not, I mean, for the general public, you are not Michael Phelps.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, what about supplements? I know that you're an Altrient sponsored athlete. You use Altrient C and Altrient ME, the B complex, or just the C?
No, I use them both. I find that, you know, number one, I think for me, the Altrient C is more of a necessity than the ME product is. I travel at a very minimum. I'm on an airplane twice a week at a very minimum.
Wow.
Yeah, it's part of my job. I am a CrossFit level one seminar staff trainer, and I travel from city to city spreading the good word. And because of that, I'm in airports, I'm in hotels, I'm in restaurants, and I take C to help support my immune system.
Yeah.
Because it's easy, and it's something that I've identified that makes my immune system stronger. I don't get sick as often as I would if I were not supplementing with Altrient C. The ME product, you know, I mean, as far as cell metabolism goes, I mean, you got to have those B complexes, and I would tell most people, hey, you can get that through your diet alone. But again, like you said earlier, when you're the 1% that really, I mean, you're focusing on every little fine tuning that you can do, supplementing with a B product, or what Altrient has is the Altrient ME product, is something that's entirely too valuable to pass up. And the way that it's delivered is next to none.
In fact, I'll tell you something. And I said this to Cheryl. We always hear about Olympic athletes, right? And I'll tell you this right now. Now starting to learn what I'm learning about CrossFit athletes, the ones that go to the games, you guys are every bit as hardworking, dedicated, and skilled as the athletes that go on to the Olympics to perform in their specific discipline. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if we see CrossFit at the Olympics at some point in time. So,
I thank you for that, because I think Cheryl and I and all the other games athletes and all the individuals that are training to try to make it to the games, they can all appreciate it. They work their butts off.
And when you're a professional athlete, one of the things that you hear over and over again is how every professional athlete is on the edge at any moment of getting sick, because their immune system is so busy trying to recover from the workouts. It has no time to deal with microorganisms that cause colds and so on. So they're always verge of getting sick. So boosting your immune system is critical. And if you're training as hard as your training or Cheryl's training, and you're not getting sick, knowing that you're coming in contact with people who are sick all the time, there's got to be something to the boosting effects of Altrient C. That's what I say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, for me personally, being on the road, it's tough because, you know, a lot of times I don't have high-quality foods right there at my fingertips. So a lot of my nutrient density is reduced. And I know that I can get my C and my B complex from the Altrient product. So it's something I can kind of lean back on. It's great.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. I want to take our last commercial break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the discussion. We're talking with Matt Chan. His website is CrossFit Verve, V-E-R-V-E. If you're in the Denver area, go check it out and train there. And, of course, Cheryl Brost, and her website is her name, Cheryl Brost, BROST.com. These are both Altrient sponsored athletes, and let's face it, you can choose who you want to be sponsored by, and these two are sponsored by Altrient, and these are two of the fittest, hardest working athletes in the world. I'd put them up against any Olympic athlete for their dedication and how hard they train, and the things that they perform at those CrossFit games boggle the mind. I'll bet you there's Olympic athletes that couldn't do some of the stuff they do, and these are just average people walking average lives, but exceeding supernatural goals in fitness. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
But your husband's heart problem's complicated. So the FCC won't let me be, or let me be me. So let me see. They try to serve
everyone wants growth hormone because growth hormone works. Now AgeForce is offering a buy one, get one free on their most popular transdermal patch. The power patch contains 25 milligrams of real somatropin per patch. It delivers real, competent human growth hormone right to your bloodstream without the discomfort of injections. There's never been a better time to see what the Power Patch can do for you. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the H-Force banner ad today. This offer ends soon. Get your growth hormone the H-Force way. Power Patch.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to altrientc.com. That's altrientc.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to altrientc.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrient C. 21st century vitamin C.
Electronic muscle stimulation is state of the art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RG Cell banner ad today.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Matt Chan and Cheryl Bross, two CrossFit Warriors. Cheryl, this will be your fourth year at the CrossFit Games?
Well, this is my fourth season I'm entering, yes. So as long as they'll help have me back, we have to qualify each year.
Ah, that's right.
So with that being said... So far, things are looking good.
That's what I was going to say. With that being said, how is your training going so far? Are you on the mark so far?
I'm on the mark so far. I've kind of entered an interesting, position this year because they've added a master's age group to the mix for the 40 to 44-year-olds. So it's a new age division for this year, of which I obviously qualify for. So I can go two ways. I can go as an elite open age group, which I've done, or I have this other avenue to fall back on. My goal is to be able to compete at the highest level. So I will qualify, assuming one more workout I have to get in the books probably today is when I'm going to do it. And assuming all goes fine, I will qualify for regionals once again, and that will not occur until June 1, May 31 to June 2nd is our regional event. And from there, you have to make the podium to be able to qualify as the elite open division.
Wow.
The Masters, they have a little different qualification procedure. Their qualification is only during the open. which were ending this week. And so to qualify to compete at the World Games as a Masters athlete, you have to finish top 20 in the world out of the open qualifiers. So right now I'm sitting number 3 spot for that age group. So odds are looking good.
One way or another, you're going to be there. How about you, Matt? This will be your 6th year that you will compete?
Yeah, that's right. And I'm in the same boat as Cheryl is. You know, I have to actually qualify. And every year the competition gets harder and harder.
Yeah.
We literally whittle down from 138,000 people down to 48 in the regionals. Each region has 48 people. 48 men and 48 women, and then from there, only 3 from that region go to the CrossFit Games. And I believe, Cheryl, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe there's only 17 regions.
Yes, 17 regions. Mm-hmm. Worldwide.
So you're talking a matter of about 50 people from the world, whittled down from 138,000 people, go to the CrossFit Games. Every single year is a fight tooth and nail to make it to regionals, let alone to the games. So you've got to be at your very best.
People should be proud just making it to regionals, it sounds like.
Oh my God, yes. Yes, without a doubt. Yes. Yeah. It's to make those top 48 in each region is a huge deal. A huge deal. Each one of these athletes have such an amazing capacity, you would be blown away. It's no rinky dink little competition. Each region is almost like the CrossFit Games.
I was just thinking, why don't they do televise the regional events too? I mean, look, they televise every flipping game all the way up till the NC2A championship, right? You got the Sweet 16 and, you know, the Elite 8. They should be televising all the regional games too.
Carl, I think you're going to get your wish at some point in time. I think it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'd love to see that. Give those people their credit too. I mean, my gosh, that sounds like we're missing an opportunity to see some fantastic athletes. Matt, one other thing. I read on the internet somewhere that you are considered the world fittest man. Is that true?
The second fittest. I took second place in the CrossFit Games last year, only second to Rich Froning, who is a back-to-back champion of the World CrossFit Games held every July. And that was a dream of mine for a full 5 years, was to make it onto the podium. The closest I had ever gotten before in the previous 5 years was fourth place. So I had just missed the podium. Last year I achieved my goal and I made it on the podium, and really it was just a shining moment for me. I'm really couldn't be more proud of how that year turned out.
How about you, Cheryl? What's the best you've ever finished in the CrossFit Games?
My highest placement so far is 7th.
Wow.
And that was 2011.
I mean, but to be in the top, I'm tongue-tied, to be in the top 20 of such an elite group is just outstanding. I mean, it's just got to be amazing.
Yeah.
So
each year I've gone out to the game hoping to, you know, to be able to provide myself an opportunity to compete at every event that they offer at the game. And, you know, I've been able to do that every year. So it's just, I blow it away. I get blown away every year.
Yeah, it's got to be exciting. Matt, when you show up, and I asked this to Cheryl, when you show up at the games, are you exhilarated? Are you tentative? Are you nervous? What is it like?
Oh, I think it's everything. I think it's a little bit of everything. I'm excited. You know, that community of people has now become a second family to me. You know, I see a lot of the guys and a lot of the women there year after year, and it's fun, it's exciting, it's nerve wracking, but it's also now, you know, this is my 6th year of doing it. It's become routine, and much like an Olympic swimmer or an Olympic rower, you know, gets prepped for their events, I think that Cheryl and I probably feel the same way. We've got a routine.
Mm-hmm.
We don't change anything the day of competition. We know how to go and execute. So in reality, I think we're all pretty level-headed. It's those newer guys that maybe are making it to regionals for the first time or to the CrossFit Games for the first time that typically you see a little bit more nervousness that can maybe pull them out of their kind of like their happy zone.
Yeah, out of their zone.
This is what I do.
Yeah.
I love it.
Listen, I want to thank both of you for coming on the show today and talking about this. I also want to thank Altrient for being a not only a sponsor of this show, but sponsoring these two fantastic athletes. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Altrient C banner ad today to learn more about their products. Also want to thank Marlene Zook, author of Paleo Fantasy, What Evolution Really Tells Us About Sex, Diet, and How We Live. It's available at Amazon.com. And I want to thank all of you for listening today. Tomorrow's Friday, which means we have Casual Friday. Alisa Profumo and I will be on. We were off the air last week, but we promised to cover all the things that you emailed into us over the past weeks on tomorrow's show. Visit CrossFit Verve, CrossFitVerve, if you want to communicate with Matt Chan or to communicate with Cheryl Brost. Go to Cheryl, CHERYLBROST.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see everybody tomorrow.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch. Usually something